Hey Panthers, it's Danica DiCioco, class of 2020, and welcome to the Seattle Prep Podcast. Today I am joined with some GJC leaders, Liv McCausland, class of 2020, and Mrs. Ford, and we got to speak all about the death penalty. If you didn't already know, the death penalty is the punishment chosen for those who committed first-degree murder, intentional murder accompanied with aggravating factors, military sabotage, treason, first-degree kidnapping, etc. But many of those who commit some of these crimes may just end up with a light sentence. Now here's Liv.
Hey Liv, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Danica?
I'm doing splendid. It's very warm in this room.
Yes, it is. I'm kind of sweating, but that's also because I'm nervous.
All right, so thank you for joining me to talk about the death penalty.
Yeah.
So what's your opinion on it?
So I personally think that the death penalty is wrong, and I just don't think that you fight fire with fire. And so I believe that if a person commits a crime that is so horrendous, that I believe that that person should be jailed for the rest of their life. However, I do not believe that in any circumstance we should take away another life by responding to a crime like that. And so I just think that the death penalty is wrong in all ways. And it's a little hypocritical too, because so many people are justifying human dignity and we respect people, and by going in and saying, okay, well, we're going to take away your right to live because you took away someone else's, that's just not the way that you respond to something, and that's not the way that we should model how we respond to crime and things like that in our society.
All right. Well, with people who do support the death penalty, it is, to play devil's advocate here, that it's so expensive just to house an inmate. Like,
yes.
With Washington, it's between $30,000 to $50,000 per inmate in taxes. And then, like, places in, like, New York, it's, like, at least $60,000 per person. So what do you feel about that, I guess?
I understand that it costs money to house people, and I get that. I just think that in the end and in the long run, I think it's worth it, because I think if, as a society, you come out and you say, okay, well, we're just going to disregard your life, we're going to get rid of you because we don't financially have the money to support your life, like, it really just speaks to a person. It says, you don't matter. It dehumanizes people, and I think that we, as a society, need to support life in general. And so, yes, I understand that it's expensive, but I think that this cost shouldn't matter as much as, like, putting money towards other things. I think that our government and our society has the money to support these people still living, because I just think it's important that life is able to keep going on no matter, you know, what you do. I just don't think we should kill them off.
And how do you feel about, like, America's one of the few first world countries that still have death penalty. Like, I think in Europe, there's only one country left that still, like, uses it. And that I think the actual stat is America's one out of 53.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about that as a nation as a whole, rather, just compared to Washington State getting rid
of it? I think as a nation as a whole and compared to other first world countries, I think it's still really hypocritical that we have the death penalty, because we have laws that say that you are not allowed to take away the right of life from any other person. And I just don't believe that it should be subject to, unless you kill someone else, then we have the right to take away your life. I just don't think that in respect to all human beings, I just think it's hypocritical of the United States and our government to be able to say, okay, we respect all life, like, we value human dignity, but then if you sink to these depths of evil, then we're going to come and take away your life as punishment. And so I just think that it's something that, honestly, just, like, a common belief and good belief in life is that you just need to take the higher ground. And so if you're going to respond to a murderer by murdering them, it's still crime and it's still a horrible way to respond. And so I just think that it's awful of the United States, and I think that it's not, I mean, the United States is different from a lot of first world countries, and something we have brazen views and we stick with what we believe, and honestly, like, we can be different and, like, countries can respect that, but I just think that in this case, like, it's not okay.
Okay. And what do you think would be, like, a kind of higher ground punishment for someone who would be on trial for a death penalty?
I still believe that just, well, I, as a person, believe in forgiveness of people, and that doesn't mean that I think that murderers should be let out back into society. However, I believe that people can grow and they can change, and so I think that by still housing prisoners and murderers in, you know, prisons, I think that we can find ways so that we help them, you know, like, grow, and so as they grow as a person, then, like, values can change. And so I think that just being able to let people grow and let people still, like, still have interactions, you know, with each other and, like, in those prisons, I just think that people can develop again. And so I think that the higher ground is just to let them keep living and hopefully implement ways that people can change. And I don't know, I just believe in more of a positive human nature.
So kind of like a rehabilitation process?
Yeah, a little bit. And I think that that is costly, which is, you know, a problem, as mentioned before. But I do believe that people can change. And so I just think that, yes, like, I'm not going to say, oh, let the murderers back out into society. But I am going to say, like, you need to find a way to, like, help these people. Because a lot of times, like, people can be mentally unstable and stuff like that. So it's, like, working with mental health. And, like, how do you help this person who is mentally unstable and who came and killed, you know, massacred, like, 17 children at a school? Like, how do you...
That is a different topic.
That's true. Right, we don't have to get into that today because it'll take like 30 minutes to talk about. Yeah. But I just think that, yeah, working with mental health and with personal development again after, like, in a prison, I think that's really important. That's the higher ground.
Do you think there's like a limit for like kind of, there's like an extent of people who you could allow to kind of get a second chance, you know? Because like a lot of these criminals, they're kind of, or murderers are adults. Mm-hmm. So you've kind of like gone past that, and this is assuming they're not claiming mental like illness or something, you know.
When I speak about a second chance and focusing on personal development, I'm more saying, I'm not saying like as a second chance like let them enter back into society. I'm more just saying have the respect for them as people and hope that they can change and that they can grow to understand what they did. And that's still keeping them in prison for the rest of their lives. Like, that's what I believe, because I don't know. It's hard to cover because it's like, in regards to prisoners who are on trial for the death penalty, like, that is the most extreme crimes. Like, those crimes are the ones that make you, you know, eligible for the death, or, like, not eligible because it's not an award, but, like, you have to have committed a horrendous crime to be considered for being put to death. And so I think that when you're at that extent, like, you don't get a second chance. Like, you're not. But I still think that, like, the focus on personal growth and just, like, being, I just don't think that killing people is the right answer, and I don't know what the right answer is, because it's a complicated topic, and that's why we're focusing on it in Global Justice Coalition, but...
Good answer. Yes. Well, the thing with people who are put on death row is that there are criminals who committed another crime, like, someone in prison, like, murdered a guard, and they're also very, like, the people put on trial are very, like, it's very, like, a lottery, it depends if you get the death penalty, because they're kind of, like, normal crimes that you assume, oh, maybe just, like, life in prison.
Which also is corrupt in the system of the death penalty, because it shouldn't be anything, like, lottery-based, like, oh, you're gonna just die today.
On your jury,
yeah.
It just, like, sucks, but say that be. Okay, and so, how do you feel about, since we were talking about the kind of cost of housing a prisoner, and if we get rid of death row, or we have rid of death row, is that with housing, is there's always private prisons.
Yes.
And what's your opinion on that? Because there's always a little bit of controversy with that, too.
Yeah. To be completely honest, I don't know much about private prisons. However, I do know things like the United States has Guantanamo Bay, and that is a place where we have a prison that's not technically under the laws of the United States because it's in a different place, but it's still run by the U.S. and so horrible things can happen there that aren't subject to punishment by United States federal authority. And so I believe that more with private prisons, I think that private prisons can get away with more in how they treat prisoners, and I think that prisons should be federally like authoritated over and federally funded, because I think that it provides a more general like base for how prisons should be run. And I think that private prisons are like, I just think it's, they're able to get away with more, and that it should just be stricter on how the prison is run and like what it entails when you're in prison. And so I think that it's kind of touchy, because you want to think about funding and that private prisons could be better, but also it's really hard, because if you want to stick with being legal and still respecting that human dignity and not letting anything slip by, like abuse and stuff like that, I think that you need to have something that's state funded and state run. But I don't know, it's complicated because you think financially, but
you'd also, maybe there'd be like kind of a like a code, like, you know how it was, like a health code, and they have the little, you know, paper that says, oh, this is okay, and like the worse the prisoner is, I guess, or I don't know.
I'm not sure.
So, and Washington State cited their reason for getting rid of the death penalty under, because of, it has a racial bias to kind of choose more people of color, and I think either it was like Hispanics or like African Americans or African spending, you know, that were more likely to be chosen to be picked for death row. And what do you think, is that like a viable reason, or do you think there's like truth in that for, you know,
I believe so. To be completely honest, I'm not actually sure how people are chosen for death penalty. However, I believe that with Washington State getting rid of, like, choosing to get rid of the death penalty because of racial bias, I think that that reason alone should not justify why they got rid of it. I think that more so Washington State should recognize that they got rid of it because of respect for human dignity and all people. And I think that by saying that they got rid of it because of racial bias, it kind of puts an emphasis on a larger issue that we have regarding criminal cases and race and all of that, which could be another long, long talk. But I just believe that with Washington State saying that racial bias is the reason why they decided to get rid of the death penalty, I don't think that's a good enough reason to say that, to justify why they did it. I think that it should just be respect for all human dignity, and I don't think that they should bring up race when talking about this, just because I think that that's, you know, creating a larger issue. I think it should just be all people in that, because in regards to that, like, all people commit crimes, and so it shouldn't be something of racial bias. It should just be respect of human dignity.
And since you are a leader of GJC, what is their GJC, oh, I'm gonna say that so many times, GJC doing, acknowledging, what are they doing to acknowledge the death penalty?
So, with the death penalty as our topic this year, we have meetings every other week on Thursdays at lunch. So, swing by, prep students. And in these meetings, we will cover topics surrounding the death penalty. And we have just introduced this new GJC Conversations, which we haven't actually decided on the name yet, so I'm just going to call it GJC Conversations, which is kind of a tongue twister.
I like it, but Theater Tea, because
Theater Tea.
Sounds like a local.
Yeah. So with those conversations, we'll have debates about topics, and so I think that really just as a club, we're working to educate people on the death penalty, because I think that as a prep community, not a lot of people have a direct relationship with someone who has been connected with the death penalty, or they just don't have a direct relationship with that. And so I think that making it more of something that you can relate to by sharing information is what the club is supposed to do. And so we also have the assembly with Peace and Justice Week, where we'll talk about the death penalty. And really, I think it's just about educating people. And it's such a controversial topic that I think allowing people to form their own opinions on whether the death penalty should be allowed or not is really important, just because, like, as a club, you want to respect viewpoints, and I think that that is really what builds our club up. And so just being able to educate people, let them form their opinions, and then just, like, learn and build from that, I think that's really important, so.
Well, thank you for joining me. That was a really good talk. Is there anything else you'd like to add or kind of want to say about the death penalty, GJC?
More about Global Justice Coalition. I think that I just kind of want to talk about the club a little bit, but I think that Global Justice Coalition is just something really important that, like I said earlier, we work to build, to educate people about controversial topics in our society and in our world. And so by having more and more people involved in our club, I think that it makes our Seattle Prep community better. And so it's really important that we have those different opinions in our community, and I know that we do. And so I think that something also that's really important in Global Justice Coalition is learning to respect others' opinions and learning how to kind of debate and figure out really what you think is right and what you think is wrong. And so it's just that respect for other people's opinions that is so crucial, because like you have things like in colleges where if you have a super conservative speaker come, you have these really radical liberal college students who come up and they're like, get off our campus, we don't want to hear you talk. And so it's really just the being able to build other people's opinions and hear different sides of the viewpoints and talk about a controversial issue that our whole country is talking about. I think that that is just so important because it really builds up character, that you have to be able to learn from others' opinions and build up your own. Like, you can't just be so single-minded and narrow-minded to the thing that you only believe in. I think it's really just exposure to issues and exposure to opinions that shape people as a person. So I think Global Justice Coalition is really important in that regards, that everyone should come to and come to the Global Justice conversations, because those are also times where we can talk about issues, and it's just important to be able to talk about those issues.
All right, that sounds so fun, so great.
Yes, hope to see you there.
Thank you for joining me, and hope to see you guys at GJC.
Now that's so interesting. Now, I got to speak with Ms. Ford as well, and we got the chance to go into the church's opinion on the death penalty, the validity of Washington's claim to get rid of the death penalty on the account of racial bias, and more. Now, here's Mrs. Ford.
So, hi, Ms. Ford. Thank you for joining me.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be on the podcast.
So, let's just get right into this. So, what is your opinion on the death penalty?
For me, yes. I am personally... I think the death penalty is wrong. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes regarding this is from Brian Stevenson, who's done a lot of work on criminal justice reform and the death penalty. And one of the things he says in his book, Just Mercy, is that each of us is more than the worst thing we've ever done. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important for us to remember as we talk about the death penalty and as we talk about life sentences without parole, is that those two options in particular really do reduce a human being to the worst act that they've ever committed, the worst thing that they've ever done. And as Catholics, we're called to see people as inherently, you know, with their inherent human dignity. And so I think that if we're looking at that and have a consistent ethic of life, we have to reject the death penalty as an option.
And you mentioned, like, as a Catholic perspective, mm-hmm. hasn't, like, the church's opinion changed over the years? Or what's, like, the current stance?
So it's super interesting. It's a great particular time right now to talk about this, because the Catholic Church's sort of official stance on the death penalty used to be, I don't have the exact language, but basically, you know, only in particular circumstances can we apply the death penalty. Whereas just this last August, so you know, only a few months ago, Pope Francis came out and changed church teaching. Official church teaching is now that the death penalty is never an appropriate sentence. Okay. So the church is really catching up with itself and catching up with this movement to abolish the death penalty globally, which is really fantastic.
And with, like, to play kind of like devil's advocate, is that the death penalty with housing inmates, it's like super expensive on taxes. Like, I think in Washington it's between like 30 to 50 grand. In places like New York it's like $60,000 just per one person. Mm-hmm. What do you think is kind of like a better solution to that, but a like compensation, I guess, for like
I think that there is sometimes when people are trying to argue for the death penalty, this issue comes up of the cost of housing inmates, or the issue comes up of, like, what about justice for these families that have been impacted? And it's really the argument regarding housing and the cost of housing inmates, people who are imprisoned, is really kind of a red herring argument, because housing inmates on death row is even more expensive than housing inmates in the regular parts of prison, just because of the added security elements.
Oh, yeah.
And so few people right now are actually being put to death.
Yeah.
A lot of times what ends up happening is, because of all of the different appeals processes, et cetera, et cetera, people end up just being on death row for a very long time and costing a lot of money in that way. So I think if we eliminate even that possibility, you do reduce some of those costs.
Yeah.
This also leads us to a whole conversation about criminal justice reform and that housing inmates in private prisons and what the private prison industry is all about is making money. And so, of course, it's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
So there's definitely all sorts of issues that come up when we start talking about the death penalty and about imprisonment.
We could touch on private prisons if you want. It's kind of related. It is a sense of, like, a solution compared to, like, federal prisons, but there's also, you know, their cons.
Yeah, there are a lot of issues that come up for me morally, personally, when we talk about private prisons, and that, you know, is it ever okay for someone to be making money off of the imprisonment of other human beings?
Yeah.
And for me, that's a no. It's also becomes, you know, it's an entire industry that's developed and that's come about only very recently, when we've made this change from state-run, federal-run, county-run, local-run facilities that are government-run facilities. The costs have actually increased because it's less efficient.
Uh-huh.
Private prisons end up being less efficient than those public prisons because they have an incentive to make money.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a lot of conflict of interest when you talk about it. So I definitely think, you know, it's part one of the reasons that we need to look at criminal justice reform overall, is this idea that really a lot of the people advocating against prison reform and against criminal justice reform are the people that are running those prisons that are making money off of incarcerating people. So definitely.
And, like, prior prisons are also kind of, like, where the saying that imprisonment is a sense of modern-day slavery, I guess, where there's that, and there's also that. There's also, like, how a lot of private prisons have, like, felons to, like, escape and all of that kind of not goodness.
not a lot of positive things coming out of the private prison industry.
Okay. And with Washington just recently getting rid of the death penalty, like, officially, they cited that it's because of racial bias. What is your kind of, like, opinion on that? Mm-hmm. If that's a, like, viable reason, or is that
Yeah, so the majority opinion written by our court system cited racial bias as, and the that the death penalty cannot escape being applied with racial bias as one of the many reasons to abolish the death penalty in our state. And I was really proud of Washington for coming out and saying that. There was another opinion, I can't remember what the official word for it is, but, like, a concurrent opinion basically saying, yes, we should still abolish this, but not citing race as one of the reasons, or racial bias as one of the reasons. So I think there was probably some internal conflict on the court talking about it. But for sure, we know from studies, statistics, data, all that's out there, research, that the death penalty is most certainly applied more in cases where the person on trial is black or brown.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't escape that. And I think when there's that inherent bias in the system and in our courts and judicial system, in the criminal justice process, there you can't apply, striking the death penalty down is the right call there.
Yeah. I was also reading that when I was, like, researching about the death penalty just generally, is that a lot of the people who do get sentenced to death row is kind of
commit similar crimes to people who just face like life in prison.
Absolutely.
Which is like super whack. And,
it is very whack. Yes. Yeah. Right. If a white person commits a crime and a black person or brown person commits the same crime, that black or brown person is more likely to face the death penalty.
Yeah.
And that white person is more likely to face life imprisonment. Mm-hmm. So that clear bias is just one of the many reasons that I think it's really important that Washington has made this statement.
Yeah.
That in their decision about it, they've said racial bias is one of the reasons.
Yeah. And it's like citing or kind of calling out their own like faults.
Absolutely.
Like a step forward, very progressive of them.
So yeah, like, you've got to know and name the thing before you can work towards coming up with solutions. Mm-hmm. Another really exciting thing, and I don't know if this came up in your research as well, because it's another very recent decision by the Washington State Supreme Court, but they've also abolished life imprisonment sentences without parole for juveniles. So that was just, I think, even maybe 2 weeks ago, like very, very recently. So yeah. Again, racial bias wasn't cited in this particular decision. Mm-hmm. However, it's another instance where the research and the data shows us that black and brown young men, for the most part, because that's who's in the prison system, more so than women, are, right, same crime, a white person versus a black or brown person, more likely to face that life sentence without parole, as opposed to having that opportunity for parole.
Whoa, I didn't know that. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, very similar issues, very similar concerns in both of those cases. And another step that Washington State has taken, right, to kind of try to make those corrections in our criminal justice system.
Yeah. And with us, go with, like, kind of with life sentences, because I was talking with Liv for my past podcast, that we were talking about how you could kind of, like, rehabilitate people, especially when they're so young, and you kind of you need to help remold them, or they're more easily impressionable kind of thing, you know?
That's supposed to be the stated goal of our prison system, is education and rehabilitation. That doesn't end up being the case, and that's another issue when it comes to private prisons, is that those stated goals are not necessarily always what's being met. Really very much depends on the prison you're in, what kind of programs are available to you, in order to meet those goals.
Wow, super fascinating. Also, did you know that America is one of 53 countries that still continue to have death row as an option? And that I think in Europe, there's only one country, it's like starts with a B, that keeps the death penalty. What's your kind of perspective on that?
The United States is one of the only what we would call like more developed countries that continues to have the death penalty as something that is an option. And I just think it shows how behind we are in terms of the rest of the world in this conversation. It's definitely something where, once again, the United States has shown that, like, we're not as progressive or as, like, that beacon of freedom that people want to believe that the United States can be, and that we can be, and we have been in our past. Holding on to this really kind of archaic
practice.
Thank you for that word. Yes. I think it just really, it's a great illustration of the fact that, you know, the rest of the world has really moved past and moved on from this and seen the dangers in how it can be applied. And we have not yet been able to do that as a country. So, but state by state, it's happening.
Yeah.
So
I think, and kind of what would you say is the projected timeline of that? Ideally.
Ideally, that's a tomorrow decision. I don't think we're going to get there, certainly with the current makeup of our court system and judges and Supreme Court. However, it really is happening state by state. Your research, you might have this number from your research, and I don't, unfortunately. But I think that it's, you know, the decisions are being made state by state.
Yeah.
And once you have a majority of states that have said this is unconstitutional for our state constitutions, then I think that's when you can come to the Supreme Court and say, look, you know, if it's 40-some states out of the 50, like, we need to be moving on this as a nation. Even if it's, you know, 30-some states. It's once you get that kind of critical mass of state Supreme Court saying one thing, then I think it comes, the pressure comes up, from below,
yeah,
to those higher institutions.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, what do you think is kind of a proper, punishment for people who...
Sorry. It's 20 states have abolished the death penalty for all crimes. So we're working towards it, yeah. Danica.
So what do you think is a more kind of viable option of, like, punishment for those? Because there's always kind of, like, more extreme people who commit a crime that will serve the same sentence. Is there kind of, like, a different sentence you think of?
You know, that's a great question for someone that has more expertise on crime and punishment and deterrence. I think one of the things that people worry about with abolishing the death penalty is that, you know, it's this deterrent to commit a crime. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you won't kill someone because you could then be killed in your sentence, which has been proven to not be real. Like, that deterrent effect isn't there in the way people think it is. So I don't have a good answer for that in terms of what is an alternative. I am sure that there are people that have studied this, particularly, as you said, right? Like, this is a international and a global issue. And so for those countries that have already abolished the death penalty, it would be really interesting to look and see what alternative punishments they've put in place that are effective. Mm-hmm. I think as a whole, right, if we want people to commit less crime, we need to be addressing those basic needs that everyone has.
Yeah.
Shelter, food, connection, and meaningful work. And I think that if you address those basic needs, the incentives that are there for most people to commit any crimes falls away. Now that could be totally wrong, but that's how I see the world.
Yeah. Okay, well. And you mentioned before we started recording that GJC is Global Justice Coalition, if you guys didn't already know, is focusing on treatment? Or?
Criminal justice reform, and particularly around the death penalty. Mm-hmm. For this year, for the peace and justice theme at PrEP, that's what we're focused on. The reason that more of our assembly in the spring will be focused on the death penalty is because our speakers that are coming in, that's their area of expertise. Mm-hmm. But we will be talking more about criminal justice reform in general throughout the year with students. We're really excited to kick that off with some monthly conversations around different topics concerned with different global justice issues, and then narrow down our focus as we come to spring with more focused conversations around the criminal justice system in Washington and nationally.
And is it going to be more like a kind of like educate, or more like a opinion-based, but a more of a like all-around discussion?
I think our goals are kind of three parts. We want to educate our community about the varying issues that are out there in terms of criminal justice system in our country, in our state, locally. We want to talk about what our students can do to advocate on whichever sides of issues they end up on. Mm-hmm. And then we want to make sure that as a school institution, right, as a Catholic Jesuit institution, we're making the right steps to advocate in our local community in whatever way we can for change in our criminal justice system. Particularly, I think, important to PrEP students, I would hope, would be in our youth jail system and the juvenile justice system, because it's, you know, those are your peers. Those are kids your age that maybe made decisions that, again, shouldn't define them for the rest of their lives, but end up doing that.
I think that's all I have to ask. Is there anything you want to add? Want to plug GJC some more?
GJC, we meet every other Thursday in Ignatius 100, and students should feel free to stop in and see what we're doing, but definitely encourage you to come to those monthly conversations. We're going to start hosting one. Our first one's going to be November 6th, so coming up pretty soon. That's Election Day, and we're going to be talking about the Electoral College and how that works with Ms. Slack and Ms. Healy.
Right. right. Well, thank you again for joining.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening in. Catch you next time, Prep.